Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, October the 8th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
First Lady Grace Mugabe vows to end factionalism that is tearing ZANU-PF apart as she continues with a campaign trail en route to taking over the leadership of the ruling party's Women's League.
A three-day mining indaba opens in Harare as the country's earnings from the sector continue to decline.
What we have seen with the coming in of a new minister is, I understand there have been a lot of changes in terms of the personnel there, in terms of the management of mining companies in Marange.
And Secretary Generals of the MDC led by Welshman Ngube and the MDC renewal team start a reunification talks in Harare.
First Lady Grace Mugabe today vowed to end factionalism that is tearing ZANU-PF apart as she continues with her campaign trail en route to taking over the leadership of the ruling party's Women's League at the Paris Elective Congress in December. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Thousands of ZANU-PF supporters gathered at the City Sports Center in Harare today for the First Lady's Meet the People tour of all provinces ahead of ZANU-PF's elective congress set for December. Grace Mugabe was recently nominated by the party's Women's League to become the wing's secretary, a key position that allows her to sit in the Politburo, ZANU-PF's supreme decision-making body between congresses. As she enters the political fray at a time when the ruling party is sharply divided over President Robert Mugabe's failure to deal with the succession question, the First Lady wasted no time on the podium, urging unity among the party's warring factions. She proceeded to call to the stage the party's chairperson for Harare province, Amos Midzi, and a leader of the Youth League in the province, Godfrey Gomwe, and pleaded with them in public to resolve their differences that resulted in violence in Mbare recently.
Today, we are going to change the face of ZANU-PF. Yes, we have wronged each other, but we should have the spirit to forgive each other and unite.
Mrs. Mugabe said factionalism in the party was being spearheaded by some senior officials, adding that she received reports that there were some of the unnamed officials who had mobilized people to demonstrate against her today. She told the gathering that some of the placards were confiscated by law enforcement agents who provided security at the rally.
Today is a good day because we are all here because of our party, ZANU-PF. In Harare, we chose Mr. Midzi, so we should support him and not lose focus.
Meanwhile, the incumbent Women's League secretary, Opam Chinguri, who has been part of the First Lady's campaign trail, said Mrs. Mugabe is the uniting factor in ZANU-PF politics. Muchinguri said the First Lady is geared to end factionalism in the ruling party.
Now there is no need for us to hold side meetings. The use of money to buy people is destroying ZANU-PF. It's now coming to an end with the First Lady leading us.
ZANU-PF is reportedly split into two factions battling to succeed President Mugabe. One camp is reportedly led by Vice President Joyce Mujuru, while the other one is linked to Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa. However, the two leaders have denied leading any factions and have pledged their loyalty to Mr. Mugabe. Meanwhile, the First Lady took the opportunity to denounce the opposition MDC for the house demolitions in Chitungwiza and Epworth. This was supported by Midzi.
City councils should not be demolishing people's homes, but provide housing for them. This is bad.
Turning to planned mass protests by the Morgan Tsvangirai-led MDC, Grace Mugabe said she appreciates that ordinary people are not happy with the current economic situation and urged those in government to fulfill their election promises. Mrs. Mugabe is this week expected to hold rallies in Masvingo and Manicaland provinces as part of a nationwide campaign to land the Women's League's top post. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
A three-day mining indaba opened at the Mikkels Hotel in Harare today. The meeting will focus on mining infrastructure and finance, which are integral to the success of any economy that is driven by the mining sector. The conference this year has a regional focus with prominent speakers and stakeholders from the Southern African region and the rest of Africa in attendance. The event has also attracted top mining decision makers from around the globe, exploration and mining companies, fund managers and private equity funds from Africa, USA, Europe, Australia and others. Mining is the country's major export earner, but it has recently been taking a hit. Industrial-grade diamond sales sharply declined to $188 million in 2013 from nearly $658 million in the previous year due to weakening demand from the United Arab Emirates, China and Belgium as mining companies in Marange scaled down operations according to trade data. The country's gold output fell 26% to 6 tons during the January to July period this year. This is attributed to power outages, the unclear black empowerment law, and lack of capital. Kimberley Process Focal Point member in Zimbabwe, Shamiso Mtisi, tells the Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that he hopes things will improve in the diamond sector as the country is introducing a raft of changes.
The thing is, as civil society, for a long time we've been calling for transparency and accountability in terms of the mining, production and export of diamonds. What we have seen with the coming in of a new minister is, I understand there have been a lot of changes in terms of the personnel there, in terms of the management of mining companies in Marange. And I understand an audit was also instituted. This shows that at least there is some attempt to make sure that people are accountable in the diamond mining sector.
So what is the way forward, Mr. Mutisi? Does the Kimberley process not compel the government at least to be transparent in terms of its diamond dealings?
No, the Kimberley process does not compel government to be transparent in terms of diamond dealing and so forth and so on and production. What the Kimberley process simply does is it requires government to compile statistics of production, statistics of export, right, and import. The Kimberley process does not closely look at mine level kind of data in terms of production from each mine.
That was Kimberley Process Focal Point member in Zimbabwe, Shamiso Mtisi, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Mutare.
Meanwhile, Zimbabwean economist and founder Economita Global Capital Chris Mugaga says the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund have been and continue to be too harsh on Harare, regardless of efforts being made on the ground to address issues affecting the country's ailing economy. Mugaga said the Bretton Woods institutions and the Zimbabwe government should work together well in addressing problems afflicting the economy, adding Harare has more to do in terms of refining and clarifying policies like indigenization that have been blocking foreign direct investment. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa and Reserve Bank Governor John Mangudya are in Washington, D.C., attending the World Bank International Monetary Meetings, reviewing the Bretton Woods institutions' performance in the past year. Mugaga says the country's economy is in a bad shape.
We're looking at the jobs data and saying the figures are not impressive. We look at the manufacturing sector, it's actually ugly. The confidence is waning, and it was true that attracting FDI is quite very difficult at the moment. One can look at it beyond the indigenization policy, because generally there has been a belief that it's difficult to attract foreign capital because of the empowerment law. There is more appetite for the foreigners to come and bring their case into the country.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa and Reserve Bank Governor Mangujga are in Washington. Do they have any leverage to negotiate on behalf of Zimbabwe, looking at the situation that Zimbabwe finds itself in economically?
I want to believe the greater institutions, which include IMF and the World Bank, they have to be somehow very nice to Zimbabwe. It's quite fair, maybe, for them to try to rescue Zimbabwean economy, given that Zimbabwe does not qualify for heavily indebted poor country status. I believe that big job. I want to believe that Zimbabwe seems to have made strides for the past year in trying to address most of the challenges which affect the economy itself.
So what needs to be done immediately for people to start feeling those benefits, not only through Zimaset, but in terms of job creation and related issues?
I think it's important for Zimbabwe to re-engage and also to be admitted into the international community. I believe, like what I said before, the Brazilian institutions have been quite very harsh, somehow unfair to Zimbabwe in terms of treatment. If they could open up the gates of direct investment in terms of support to the balance of payments, it will help Zimbabwe to extricate itself from the comatose state it is in currently. Because looking at Zimbabwe, there are some countries which have been served with gloves by the IMF. You realize that their record is quite bad, both politically and in terms of economic management.
Why do you think the Bretton Woods institutions have been so tough on Zimbabwe?
You know, we should appreciate one thing in analysis, that it's also a political issue. I think, you know, Zimbabwe has been blamed on in terms of governance, but there are also a lot of factors of political issues. Since inclusive government, when, you know, two political parties united in 2009, there had been quite a concerted effort on the front of the economy to try to drive it in a desired direction. It's a country which is ripe for investment, and I want to believe the fund should come to Zimbabwe in terms of an element of certainty. If the position is pushing for 51%, I want to believe it's certain that 51% you have to see it. So we can no longer continue to allocate and blame certainty. If you make a comparison with South Africa today, you know there's a militarized region which actually poses more threat to business than what could be happening in Zimbabwe today.
What more can be done to revive the country's economy?
You know, we can't underrate the issue of political succession, for example, and generally the risk posed in terms of maybe what we consider to be a regulator for beer is quite significant. So if the party, which is the ruling party in Zimbabwe, could solve its leadership succession matter urgently, I'm quite sure that it can also have its own positive impact. In addition to possibly looking at Zimaset, because when you talk of Zimaset, I think it should be very clear to know that it's a blueprint which is quite overaging. It's covering more than 5 years. So in itself, it covers every policy, be it monetary or fiscal.
That was economist and founder of Economita Global Capital, Chris Mokaka. He spoke with Sandra Nyaira from Harare.
Rigging, ballot stuffing, intimidation, and even violence, these are the words that have largely been used to describe ZANU-PF's way of conducting elections in the country. But now the tables have turned, and activists in the MDCT are using the words to describe their ongoing elections as the party prepares for an elective Congress this month. Party officials are jostling for top posts other than the vice president and chairman's positions. The secretary general's position is up for grabs, with 7 provinces nominating organizing secretary Nelson Chamisa ahead of party spokesman Douglas Monzora. Although there have been complaints from almost all the 8 provinces that have held elections so far, Bulawayo and Matabeleland North provinces have been the hardest hit, with accusations and counter-accusations of poll rigging resulting in some members defecting to the MDC renewal team. Voting in the 2 provinces was marred by violence and alleged voter intimidation, with reports alleging party leader Morgan Tsvangirai was involved in the flawed voting process. Swithan Chirodza, an election agent of Matson Tlalo, who lost the Bulawayo province chairmanship post, tells Studio 7 the elections were marred by what he calls unprecedented flaws.
I just want to mention one of the sad things. When Albert Mhlanga won his confirmation as organizing secretary, he was actually strangled right in front of the president. strangled and beaten up. And it was one top official of the MDC who had incited the youth. Other youths that were outside were also assaulted. And, you know, the template is very clear that these things shouldn't happen. And then there was ballot stuffing. You know, we complain that ZANU-PF rigs, but when we rig on ourselves, I mean, how bad are we?
That was Swithan Chirodza, the election agent for MDC Smartson Hlalo. He spoke to Studio 7 from Bulawayo. However, MDCT Deputy Spokesman Joel Gabuza tells Studio 7 that allegations of irregularities are to be expected during an election.
Well, indeed, we have received a lot of reports. We have observed some of the problems. We were there in some areas where these problems emanated. Well, it's expected in these kinds of elections to experience some a bit of turbulence. That is normally expected because, remember, this is an emotive election which is leading towards our national elections for national positions. But generally, somehow managed to quell these mishaps and come up with a result which is generally accepted to the party. But you must appreciate that as we move towards the national elections, these commotions are bound because these are very, very sensitive elections. We've had some problems in Bulawayo. We had a bit of problems in Lupane, where the Binga and Wange people had their own grievances, which were really attended to by the leadership or may still need to be attended to try and resolve. So we expect that, and normally we expect that good leadership must be able to solve these problems.
That was MDCT Deputy Spokesman Joel Gabuza speaking with Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo. Meanwhile, Binga South legislator Prince Madubeko Sibanda, who was said to have on Monday defected to the MDCT renewal team together with two other members of parliament, has denied making such a move.
I was never paraded by anyone anywhere on Monday, 6 October 2014, as is being purported from the reports in various media outlets. I want to state that I'm quite a happy man in my current political home, to an extent that crossing the party has never occurred in my mind. I am happy with the leadership of Dr. Morgan Richard Tsvangirai, which makes my beliefs to be totally parallel to those of the renewal team. Because those that are in the renewal team are those that believe that Dr. Richard Morgan Tsvangirai has failed. And I am one of those that believes that indeed his leadership of the MDCT makes the MDCT to remain the sole and only hope of Zimbabweans to regain their lost dignities.
That was Binga South legislator Prince Madubeko Sibanda speaking with Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo.
Meanwhile, Secretary Generals of the MDC, led by Welshman Ncube and the MDC renewal team, with their negotiation teams met today in Harare as mandated by their political parties and signed a memorandum of understanding to officially commence talks of reunification. In a statement, Priscilla Misihairampo Mushonga and Tendai Biti said the basis for the reunification is based on the common history, bond, and the origins of the Movement for Democratic Change as formed in 1999. They say the talks will be guided by the shared values and principles of the MDC, which include tolerance, the rule of law, peace, democracy, gender equality, and servant leadership. The two formations are convinced of the necessity and imperative of the reunification as an important step towards achieving national progress and achievement of the ultimate goal of a democratic and prosperous Zimbabwe. The two political parties are committed to crafting progressive policies to achieve a better life for all Zimbabweans. However, they will continue to be part of the grand coalition talks and consultations in which the two parties have been involved in and are fully committed.
Harare Central Hospital has discharged the conjoined twin babies surgically separated in June in an 8-hour operation that caught the attention of the world. The medical team will continue to monitor the twins for a few weeks. The Chidiyo twins, Kupakwashe and Tapiwanashe, were born April 22nd to Agnes and Moses Chidiyo in Murewa, Mashonaland East Province. The then two-month-old twins were joined from the chest to the upper abdomen and shared a liver. A 50-member team of medical personnel performed the surgery, and President Robert Mugabe visited the twins and also invited the surgical team to the State House to congratulate them. The head of the surgical team, Dr. Bothwell Mbubayesango, confirms that the twins have been discharged.
We are optimistic that something might be done, but it will depend on the discussions which we hold as a team, including the anesthetists, the pediatricians, the surgeons, the nurses, if we have the capacity to separate them, and also what possible complications can occur and how we can solve them. Most likely it will end up being the whole group which was involved in the last twins. What we need to do is to create a team which even in future, if we get similar type of twins, the same team will make sure they do what they are now experienced in doing, because it takes time for people to acquire the expertise of separating the conjoined twins. It means we won't change a winning formula. We'll keep to the same group and make sure that if we need certain other expertise which we have got in the camp, then we call them to assist with these ones, because every operation is different.
When are you likely to start?
It will depend on the test. So far, we've done some of the tests. They are not conclusive. So most likely we'll do more tests and make sure that we sit down together as a team. When everything is done, then we set the date.
That was Lieutenant Israel Kenel Dube, a surgeon who was part of the medical team that separated the GTO twins, who says that the same winning team is working on yet another set of conjoined twins, born in Mount Darwin last month with one male sex organ, two heads, four arms and three legs. Dube was saying his team has already carried out initial tests on the twins, which will determine whether they can be safely separated or not. Now, we bring you the story of Dr. Mbubayesango.
They are out of hospital now and at home and doing very well.
So there were no further complications after the operation?
No, none at all.
But would they be required to come back for visits?
Well, we may need to see them maybe once a week for the next 3-4 weeks.
Dr. Mbubayesango, of course, the operation, like you are saying, was very successful. But we understand that Harare Central Hospital continues to face some difficulties. What are these?
Well, there are lots of difficulties. The one that comes immediately to mind is equipment. You know, equipment breaks down, it needs repair, it needs maintenance, equipment gets out of date, and we need to acquire a new one. You need accessories for the equipment, and this is not unique to another hospital. Any hospital in the world would have those needs, but our problem is compounded by the fact that we don't have money to do all those things.
That was Dr. Bothwell Mbubayesango speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare Central Hospital.
We take a look at regional and international news.
The first Ebola patient diagnosed in the United States has died in a Dallas, Texas hospital. Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital says Thomas Eric Duncan died this morning. Duncan, a Liberian national, was visiting family in Dallas when he became sick and entered the hospital on September the 28th.
Lawyers for Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta have asked the International Criminal Court to drop charges of crimes against humanity against him. The Zimbabwe National Students' Union has resolved to engage the Ministry of Higher Education following serious cases of sexual harassment of female students by lecturers in colleges and universities. ZINASU Gender Secretary Joanna Mamombe says 230 female students who attended a one-day provincial gender summit in Harare today noted that offending lecturers were being protected by their colleagues and deans at the higher institutions of learning. She tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube that top on the agenda was the issue of sexual harassment, which is devastating female students at some colleges and universities.
We are discussing the most problems that have been raised. They include the sexual harassment from the male lecturers. And also, they've also raised issues of lack of accommodation within the campus, whereby now the female students, they are forced to go and rent outside campuses, whereby they are charged exorbitant rents.
Now, you touched on this issue concerning sexual harassment by lecturers. How serious is it?
It's actually very serious. For example, I'll give you an example of the late assignments, whereby everyone can submit their assignment late at institutions. But now, when it comes to us as female students, once you have a late submission of your assignment, the lecturer, they force us to engage in sex in return to accept our assignments at all the colleges. So you find that this is actually serious. And as much as we want to report such cases, we usually find the confidence in our deans. But now our deans are males and they can even abuse us.
That was ZINASU Gender Secretary Joanna Mamombe speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harare.
Elsewhere, Prophet Walter Magaya, the leader of the Prophetic Healing and Deliverance PhD Ministries, has turned Good Samaritan and donated $18,000 towards the Pretty Xaba Cancer Fund, which enabled artist Xaba with throat cancer to go for treatment in India. Mafundikwa speaks to Studio 7's Mavelas Mhlanganyahuye on the issue.
You know, I would like to thank all those who contributed towards the Let's Help Pretty Xaba campaign. At this juncture, I would safely say Pretty is able now to fly from Zimbabwe to India, where she's going to undergo surgery. And I would like to applaud the likes of Prophet Magaya of PhD Ministries, who came in with a chunk of the money, which amounted to $18,000. And there are other people who also came through organizations like PSI. They weighed in with about $1,000, 136. We also have Forces Security. They also gave us $1,000. And it also of other people, individuals, who keep putting money into our EcoCash account. So I'd safely say, in terms of leaving Zimbabwe, traveling to India, we are covered on that note. But what we are also saying is for those corporates and those other individuals who had made pledges to help Pretty, we say you should still come through with those, because it doesn't necessarily mean that what we have raised now will be enough to cater for everything else that Pretty needs. She will need aftercare. There are still more expenses to be incurred.
When do you expect Pretty to leave Zimbabwe for India?
Pretty is going to be traveling on Saturday, and so she arrives in India on Sunday. And the moment she gets to India, the doctors there will start to deal with her directly from a medical perspective.
That was Tawonga Mafundikwa, who is leading the fundraising campaign of the Pretty Xaba Cancer Fund, speaking to Studio 7's Mavelas Mhlanganyahuye from Harare.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about the state of the economy, especially with Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa and the RBZ Governor in the United States at World Bank meetings.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
And now we look at our top stories.
First Lady Grace Mugabe vows to end factionalism that is tearing ZANU-PF apart as she continues with her campaign trail and road to taking over the leadership of the ruling party's Women's League.
A three-day mining endeavor opens in Harare as the country's earnings from the sector continue to decline.
And Secretary Generals of the MDC, led by Washman Ngube and the MDC Renewal Team, start reunification talks in Harare.
That's our broadcast for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night.
And I'm Sitandekile Mhlanga, also wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.